And shine, Atlanta. It's me, Big Papa Squid, joined by the All-American National Champion, former Atlanta Falcon, Michael.
Ali Mack. Oh, that's me. Okay, sorry.
Stands for Johnson. And we all know her as the first lady of Atlanta baseball, Miss Ali Mack, the leader of three people called an army, Ali's Army.
Wow. That sounded like probably the first shot you've taken at Ali. It's a momentous occasion.
6:03. Yeah. Shots have started.
There we go.
That Ali, the honeymoon wouldn't last forever,
Of course not.
Yeah.
I kid. Everybody knows I'm kidding. Look, we are the morning show. There's a lot to talk about today in this show. We've got the NBA playoffs this year has been nothing but choke jobs, according to Abe Gordon, and he's not far off after last night. The Falcons' new rookie numbers have arrived. There's controversy about that, guys. What will Michael Penix take his do-rag off for?
Why the Falcons
traded up for James Pierce? We got a plethora of topics today, a lot of things, but I think we should probably start with what has become the Eleanor of the Atlanta Braves. And you guys remember, going in 60 seconds, his Eleanor, which was his car that he could never quite steal. And apparently that is reaching 500 for the 2025 Atlanta Braves, because twice now we have had it within the grasp of just one more win, and we have fallen short by one run each time. Last week, the Braves were right there getting back to 500, and they lose 2-1 to the Rockies. And last night, they're at one more win from 500, and guess what? Grant Holmes has his worst outing in maybe, like, I guess 2 weeks since that Diamondbacks outing in Arizona. And then you turn around, and you just couldn't get some hits when you needed it. Ozzie Albies continues to be, brutal. Michael Harris got a hit last night, but, little short, and they fall 4-3 to the Reds with a chance to clinch the series tonight.
You know, yesterday I was saying you got to love the drama, because we had it yesterday and we ended up with a win. Because it came down to the 10th inning. Today, I don't love the drama.
I was going
to
say.
It went the wrong way.
You just can fold that drama up and put it right back in your pocket, man. I don't need it anymore. And look, man, the elephant in the room for me is going to be taken away from this game, some of the managerial decisions, and specifically, and I know we'll get to it in just a minute, you were talking about the Eleanor. Like, I feel like the Eleanor the other way around is we can't seem to quit Eddie Rosario. You know what I mean? Like, bringing him up in the ninth inning, it's like, dude, why do we keep going this route? There's so many other options. You didn't have to pinch hit for Eli. You could have put Sean Murphy in the lineup. I mean, heck, I would have taken Orlando Arcia, which is crazy to say.
I feel like the entire city of Atlanta at the same time went, huh?
Like, what?
What's happening?
Allie's right. You're wrong. Mike, you can put anybody in there, but you might as well put Stuart Fairchild up there if you're going to hit Arcia in there. Because that
is... Allie say that? Like, I didn't hear that
part. No, I said you, Mike. I said Allie's right. I agree with Ali said, but I don't agree with anybody. I don't care about the move. I think this is – you guys, I want to know what y'all think about this. Do you care about who it was, or do you care about the explanation?
Can we hit the pause button? Let's let the people hear what Brian Snicker had to say about the explanation.
Yeah, this guy's got better numbers off right-handers, way better. And thought maybe Eddie could recreate some old magic.
Yeah, I have a problem with both. I mean, like, do I have to choose one or the other? Because I have a problem with both. I do, man. And I think we've done a fair job on this show of backing Brian Snicker when he needs to be backed and asking questions when questions need to be asked. I just felt like a case of, like, what are we freaking doing here, man?
When did Brian Snicker turn into Kirk Cousins is what I want to know. With this
little diarrhea of the mouth.
Well, the diarrhea of honesty. So, Ali, it's like one of those deals where we all know, you make a decision, and you have real statistics that back it up, but you're still torn. At the end of the day, you kind of go with this gut feeling based on nostalgia, or hey, it worked before, or I don't know why, but I just have a feeling. Yet you never say that out loud.
Yeah.
Even if it doesn't work, you never say it out loud. You never, like, I don't need to hear, well, I'm just looking for some old magic. I get it, and I understand the thought process of it. That doesn't mean it's right, and it doesn't mean I want to hear it, and it doesn't mean guy making a couple million dollars to make decisions should be using those things, right? I mean, that sounds more like a fan answering that question.
I mean, I think we've all learned that Disney taught us wrong. Fairy tales aren't real. So this
wow.
magic.
Sorry about that, Grant. No, you know, yeah, sorry about that. Wow.
No, I mean, my life is a fairy tale.
Yeah. I wasn't talking to you, Grant. Sorry.
But I understand the nostalgia thing. I get it, but facts are facts right now, and Eli White should have stayed in.
I agree. And look, I'll say this, Bo, and you're like, it's one of those things that, you know, when it goes wrong, like, I don't even think that's something you admit if it had gone well. You know what I mean? If Eddie Rosario, you know, hits a bomb when he pinch hits, I don't think you come in bedwars and go, just had an inkling, you know, like, just, you know what, had a good feeling about it. Had right. the chest was on fire. It felt me pulling myself towards Eddie Rosario. It's like, no, dude, you should probably have a little more depth to that.
You say, this is his career against righties, and then, you know, I put all that up, and then I said, my gut said that that's the stat I want to go with or something like that.
Yeah.
But to take out, to Allie's point, to take out a guy with a .343 on base percentage, and Eli White, who's been timely with hits this season for a guy who has yet to get a hit since he's been a Brave, and has struggled really the last 3 years. I mean, really struggled since the 21 playoff run. And that's about it. Is bad, especially when you look at your 5-6 hitters, and then you take out the only guy in that little range that's doing well as an everyday player, which is White. I don't count Baldwin because he's an everyday player. It just makes no sense.
Can we talk about Drake Baldwin for a second too? Because I think that when you look at Drake Baldwin and, you know, he hits the tater, which actually was the first time he pulled a home run in his career so far, which, you know, even though it was, to right center. Like, can we start highlighting the fact that Drake Baldwin, when he's in the lineup, gives you probably the best at-bats of anybody top to bottom when it comes to the lineup? Like, we've got to stop ignoring this and sliding this guy down into the bottom third of the order and plug him in somewhere in the 5 or 6 hole. It just makes a lot of sense.
Well, I think Ozuna is probably giving you the best at bats over of an everyday player right now. I think Baldwin's doing a phenomenal job. I also think though that I'm interested to y'all's take. I'm one of those guys that thinks your lineup should be like 1 through 4 to 5, and then 1 through 4 a little bit. And I think you reset.
Say that one more time. 1 through 4 to 5, and then 1 through 4.
Yeah, you should have it where you want to have – you don't want to have every – to me, you can't have 1 through 5 be guys that hit and get on base, and then 6, 7, 8, 9 just bad.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't want Baldwin hitting further up. I understand the thought process, but I need somebody down there that when Eli White, who's got a .350 on base percentage, gets on base, someone behind him is hitting that can produce a good at-bat. Because then it's just a waste, you know. Then you just need to have 1 through 6, and then 7, 8, 9 can just be garbage. And you know that every time they come up, they're automatic outs. And I don't want that in a lineup. I want my lineup to be one that I have guys that I think can produce in similar spots, kind of doubled up. So it's basically two lineups.
Well,
if that makes sense.
I'm going to hold your feet to the fire on that in a second. But first, let's hear Brian Snicker talking about Drake Baldwin.
Yeah, Drake's doing fine. You know, he's been good. I mean, it's kind of good. I think I liken him to like some of those starters you bring out and put in the bullpen to kind of get them acclimated to all this. So, you know, he's doing good.
Do you not think it would, though, benefit like Ozzie Albies to slide further down and let's have him in the bottom third of the lineup and put a Drake Baldwin in that spot when the situation arises when Sean Murphy's not playing?
Well, what's going to benefit? What would benefit would be Matt Olson, because then
that's my point.
Well, hold on, he might see some pitches to hit. Ozzie Albies is seeing pitches. That's my thing. Ozzie Albies is just taking pathetic at bats. It might take him a little bit. It might do him some good to go look at what he's doing, maybe sit down and try to address the approach. I'm not telling you that Ozzie Albies doesn't work, you know, and he's not in the cage and everything, but it's the way he approaches at bats that to me that needs work. I know Michael Harris is working his butt off, and he's trying to take different approaches, and he's starting to have a little bit of success here and there with a hit, you know. But to me, Ozzie's approach is the problem. It's not he's not seeing pitches, you know. Well, I think Matt Olson is the one suffering, and he didn't have a good night last night with three strikeouts. He did have an RBI, but to me, he's not seeing the pitches that other players are doing, mainly because of what's behind him. I understand the thought process, but I've got Eli White getting on at a 350 clip. I need somebody behind him that can put him in.
Well, and I see more of a marriage, I think, between what Matt Ellison is doing and who's hitting behind him. I will give Ozzie Albies credit for one thing. He did hit sack fly last night, which we've talked about it a number of times on the show. I know I have. The situational awareness at the plate has been awful. So just like I thought it a win just to see Ozzie Albies hit a sack fly last night. I'm like, thank God he didn't ground out. Like, we actually hit a ball to the outfield and we had a chance to knock a runner in. And I tweeted it last night, man. You had a situation in, what was it, the seventh inning where Riley steals a base. You get a couple of seconds. And because of your situational awareness, you came away with two runs in an inning where you had two singles. And yeah. I think that speaks volumes.
I don't like a lot of the lineup. especially when Ronnie comes back, I want Harris in the nine spot. Because it does make a difference. You're going to, you know, you're not, you're going to be, the guys are going to see pitches depending on who's been in front of them and who behind them. And, you know, and like, I don't want to see Michael Harris get on base when Ronald's coming up next, right?
Yeah.
But I want to see Michael Harris be able to see pitches he can hit. And I think guys are going to come at him a little bit more. So I just think that right now, without Ronald, with what Ozzie's not giving you, there's holes. I'd rather see a guy that's going to give me a good at-bat behind Matt Olson than a guy that's going to have a bad approach that they're not afraid of.
Yeah. Plenty to come still on the Atlanta Braves. We'll talk about Grant Holmes later on in the show and his outing last night. But when we come back, we'll get to the front page. Allie will take us through the NBA playoffs. And the Falcons' new numbers have been released. Why a lot of people in the city of Atlanta got an issue. Stick with us here. It's the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Mike Johnson, Allie Mack. Squidbilly Bo Morgan and Dylon not in the house today. One Garrett Chapman hanging out with us on the other side of the glass. Dylon is going to a PGA event in Philadelphia. Don't want to put him on blast. Is what it is. Just throwing that out there, man. You know what? You guys throw it right back if you want to. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us here on the Morning Shift. We're going to get to the front page in just a second. Got to talk about the NBA playoffs. One game was good. One game was not last night. And also some of the craziness going on with the rookie number release. I don't have an issue. Seems like a lot of people do. And I feel like if anybody would have an issue, it'd probably be me. But yet I don't. I do want to bring up one thing, though. And, Allie, I don't know if you've been made aware of this. There is a momentous occasion happening in our counterpart's household today. So Squid does this thing called MGA.
Okay.
And it's just his men's golf league on Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? He hasn't participated so far this year in MGA.
I took four weeks off. Let me finish.
Okay. And it's a big deal for him. It's what, like when I first started hanging out with Bo, like this is a massive event.
Right.
He's going back to MGA tonight.
Oh.
I'm not sure how I feel about it. It seems a little soon. You know what I mean? Guy can't come in the studio and hang out with us for a few hours, but he's going to go play golf.
What was your first thing out of the house after you had kids?
That's a loaded question for me. First of all, it was during COVID when we had our first.
So nothing.
Yeah, but I was also like coaching football at the time. So my first thing I did was leave and go to a football practice and work my group out during training camp. It was August of 2020.
So it was work.
It was work. Not golf. It was work. But just throwing it out there.
But how close is the golf course to your house, Bo?
Across the street.
Okay. So yeah. So that makes perfect sense.
Allie, it's not even. I mean, it's. I am. If I can look out my door and see hole two.
There you go.
So
I kid. Of course. I'm excited for you to get back on the golf course today.
Well, that, you know, that's funny because that's what Amy, we were talking, and she was like, you know, it'd be different if I couldn't call you and you couldn't be here in, like, you know, 2 minutes.
Right.
Sure.
She's like, if you were, like, 40 minutes down the road, it would be completely different. It's funny, though, because, you know, next week I do come back, right? And it's going to be a busy week. There's one day I'm gonna fill in on the steakhouse after this show, and then and so it's like, hey, just so you know, like, it's going to be kind of busy. But, yeah, this week is, you know, it's like, it's fine. She's a big girl. She can handle it.
Oh, you're talking about Amy. Okay. I was just making sure you weren't talking about Pork Chop. I was like, no,
oh, no,
not yet.
Pork Chop, she's going to, she's
not a big girl yet.
No, Sprinkles is babysitting her tonight.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be awesome if your dog could babysit? Oh, my gosh, dude, my life would be so different.
I would straight up. Like, knowing my dog's characteristics, I would trust my dog if she was, you know, capable of.
And if it was legal?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, no, I would never do it, but I'm saying, like, if dogs could babysit, my dog would be one that I do trust. Mm-hmm. There'd be some other dogs I probably would not trust.
I will say this, and my kids were petting my dog last night. We were showing my kids last night the video of my wife meeting my dog for the first time. Mm-hmm. It was a Christmas present, and I walked them in our apartment we were living in. It's still on my IG. And they thought it was the coolest thing. And then we were trying to show the dog the video, like my dog Charlie. Isn't it weird how dogs can't see phones, really? Like, you can't ever be like, hey, check this picture out. They're like, wait, what? What is that on the wall? Oh, my God. I'm like, dude, just calm down. It's right here. I know you hear mommy's voice whistling and everything else, but it's all good.
Well, I have one video that I figured out my dog Han will watch. And
yeah.
He just the whole time will twist his head and he's just watching. And it's
he'll look at the screen?
Yes, he looks at the screen.
Wow.
I have video of it, I'll show it to you, but he just twists his head.
Is it is it him flying his spaceship?
Does he wear number 11? Going to get into these Falcons draft class numbers and also some of the veterans that changed some things and some of the new signees as well. But first, we're going to go to Allie for the NBA playoff.
So the Thunder demolished the Nuggets in Game 2 last night, 149-106. SGA hit 34 points. Russell Westbrook got 19, and Nikola Jokic came through with 17. That series is now tied up. Game 3 is Friday at 10.
Yeah, Jokic fouled out. There's nothing to talk about with the game. I thought the biggest thing that happened last night was in the press conferences where Adelman, the coach, the interim coach of the Nuggets, goes, "Yeah, we got punked."
It wasn't good.
I mean, dude, phenomenal. He's like, and I expect a better effort Friday, you know. And then I love what SGA said though. I mean, SGA. Kind of summed it up at the very important part. He goes, look, I think you got to take the emotion out of this. He's like, it didn't matter if we won by one or 100. It's one win. And it only ties the series. He's like, and that's that. So, basically, we got to turn the page and whatever. He's like, you know, sometimes you start hot, you start cold, but everything will look different on the road. We got to turn the page. This is over. And – it's so funny because to me what I hear is one team is like, we've got to take this game and use it to win the next game because of how we got handed to us. And then the other team that won it was like, yeah, we can't even think about this game ever again. It's over and we got to come out with the same intensity.
Yeah, game one, I mean, it seemed like Denver was shocking everybody that they go and get this win, but then it's like Thunder kind of took it the Thunder took it personally that they lost this game. This is just a little clip real quick that it always reminds me of.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood.
That's the Thunder after game one.
I love it, man.
All right, we got to talk about the Knicks. They beat the Celtics, even though at one point the Knicks were behind by 20 points. They cut that deficit to 4 with about 3 minutes left. Took the lead with less than 2 minutes left, thanks to Jalen Brunson.
Tatum across midcourt with 10. Top of the key with 8. Defended by Robinson with 7. Right wing 3. Crossover. Foul line with 4. Left block. Step back. Stolen by Bridges. Bridges chucks it down court. They've done it again. The New York Knicks take both in Boston and a 2-0 lead heading back to the Mecca.
Yeah, 91-90. Josh Hart hit 23. Karl Anthony Towns with 21 and Jalen with 20. Game 3 is Saturday at 3:30.
Yeah, I did not prepare any sound bites for my explanation of what happened in this game. But I can tell you that once again, after getting up to a big lead, 20-point lead at one point in this game, the Celtics just they locked up in the fourth quarter. I even heard the analysis. They play it. I think it was Legler on ESPN was like, it's odd for a team that has a championship to play tight in the fourth quarter. But that's what they've done. They outscored 30-17. For Jaylen Brown to score 0 points in the fourth quarter, that's not good. Look, Tatum, I think, pressed a little bit. But give Mikal Bridges a lot of credit. For two straight games, he has made massive defensive plays to seal the game, including last night where Tatum dribbles over and Bridges gambles and leaves Brown, who he's you know tasked to guard, to make the play where it essentially Tatum dribbled and moved over into a trap that wasn't there that Bridges heads up created. I'm not sure that this series is over at all, but I will tell you that the Knicks have straight up punched the Celtics in the face in the second half, two straight games, and I am very curious to see how the Celtics come out in game three.
Hey, Bo, this is what you sound like, though.
This ain't fair.
Every time you do that. So give me a second here. I have the power of the board, so. look. This series
I'm gonna have to drive my ass to that studio and punk Garrett now.
Come on.
Mr. Sensitive.
I got something for everything, Bo. Don't worry. No, like, look, this series is far from over. No, the Boston Celtics are still the best team in the NBA at this point. I mean, they have the playoff experience. I'm not super worried that they're out of this. But mentally, coming back from consecutive 20-point losses at home in games one and two, it sets the tone. And look, Boston needs to come out and get a win in a big way in game three. And that's really make no bones about it.
Nice work. I think it's been a fun playoff so far, obviously, and it's the NBA playoffs, so you know we already got like 2 months left, so like we'll put a bow on that thing at some point, but it's been a lot of fun, and obviously a couple things that are very interesting, man. It's going to be nice to see how the Celtics bounce back. All right, well, we got a couple minutes left. We got to get into this topic about the Atlanta Falcons rookie numbers being let out yesterday. Now, let me just walk you guys through this. Jack Nelson was given number 69. Billy Bowman Jr., 33. Xavier Watts, 31. James Pierce Jr., given 27. That'll look a little interesting coming off the edge. But, Bo, the highlight of the day, and a lot of people had an issue with it, is Jalen Walker being given number 11. Now, if anybody doesn't remember, that was donned by one future Hall of Famer and one of the greatest to ever do it in the Atlanta Falcons uniform. That's Julio Jones.
Yeah, that's also the number he wore at Georgia. Jalen Walker did.
Yeah,
I understand some of it, but I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
And
where is Julio?
There seems to be some revisionist history about the last 4 years of Julio's tenure here and how the fan base kind of turned on him, and now they're suddenly taking up for him over a number. I love, if you guys want to know, get the number breakdown, go to AtlantaFalcons.com. Taryn Wack did a phenomenal job of breaking down the numbers these guys wore in college. The interesting one to me was Billy Bowman, who will wear number 33, guys. Bowman wore 2-5 at Oklahoma, and her write-up was, no one wears number 2, and it has not been worn since Matt Ryan last donned it in 21, and Drake London obviously has 5. I have no issues, though, Mike, with the number 11 being used. To me, the only number that's untouchable in the organization is number 2.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And it is what it is, man. Look, there is nobody that loved Julio. Like, I played 2 years of college with Julio before I got here. And then, you know, obviously he's drafted during the lockout, played, what, 4 more years with Julio Jones while he was here. I love Julio. But to me, when you're talking about numbers that should not be worn, I don't think we just get into this business of like, well, he's good, don't want anybody – Don't need anybody. Like, no. Like, we're solid on that, dude. Like, you know, you talk about future Hall of Famers. Tony Gonzalez is in. Like, I don't need to see that happen. I just think that right now, Matt Ryan, there's recency to it, what he's meant to this organization. The fact that as much as we love Michael Penix, you're still trying to find the next guy kind of in that lineage. I'm good, man. Like, at some point, maybe I'll move on and say, all right, number 2, this, that, and the other. This is a conversation that we had here. I wore 78 in college. There's nobody that wears 78 for the Atlanta Falcons. It was just not a thing.
Mike Kinn, baby.
No, but they did not give out Mike Kinn's number. It was a thing. I had to go on a 79, so it is what it is. I don't have a problem with it. All right, speaking about rookie draft class and the numbers, James Pierce Jr., who was number 27, had an interesting article by Josh Kendall yesterday, some of the insight into the trade-up that was James Pierce Jr., and Allie's going to hit us with the fact that Atlantans seem to be missing the boat on a would-be, should-be holiday. Stick with us here. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 99 The Game. Welcome back in. It's the Morning Shift, 641 a.m. Allie, Mike, Bo, and Garrett hanging out with you here on this rainy Thursday morning. We were just talking, Allie and I, on the way back in about how it's supposed to rain all weekend. You guys have like something you like to do on rainy weekends? Because like with two kids at home, it's like, we're not going anywhere, dude. Just strap in. My wife takes them to the aquarium all the time, though.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It's a great one for a rainy weekend. I don't know why, but the aquarium just stresses me out with kids.
Like, what?
She does it like by herself and she's fine. But like my thought, like when I go to the aquarium and take the kids, I'm just like in a heap of just like, where's the beer? And they do sell beer at the aquarium. Shout out. You can go get a beer out there. Feel good about it. But there's certain activities. Like when I look at a rainy weekend, I start stressing. I'm like, I got to get the kids out of the house for a little bit. Even if we go for a drive, the kids will lose their ever loving mind if we just sit in the house for 2 days or two and a half. So maybe there's somebody out there that can let me know what a good rainy day activity is. We can hit on the socials at 929 Morning Shift. I don't know, man. It's a downward spiral when you get locked in that house all weekend. I don't really have a great rainy day tradition with the kids just yet. Look, when it's nice weather, a million things you can do with kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like a bunch of parks. You can go all over the place. You go to the zoo. You can do, you can go anywhere. But rainy, locked in the house. Speaking of things to do in Atlanta or Atlanta just in general, Allie, you had an interesting conversation about what could be or should be a holiday here.
Yeah, today should be a holiday in Metro Atlanta. You can take this to the water cooler today. Does the name John S. Pemberton ring a bell to anyone?
It sounds familiar.
Weren't they like special police for trains or something?
No.
Y'all Pinkerton. Should be ashamed of yourself for this. Are you kidding?
Thank you, Garrett. Garrett knows.
What is it?
I don't want to steal her thunder, but come on, guys. Where are y'all from again? I mean, come on.
Well, Mike's from Pensacola, Florida.
Where are you from, Bo?
You can miss me with that stuff. I'm an outsider to this crew.
Okay.
So John S. Pemberton created what is now known as Coca-Cola.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And apparently,
does feel like a dropped ball.
Yeah. But put that in your arsenal now.
Okay.
John, on this day, carried a jug of Coca-Cola to Jacob's Pharmacy where they realized, it's pretty awesome, tastes great. They put it in the store's soda fountain in 1886, and they were selling about 9 glasses a day at 5 cents a glass. I think they've gone up a little bit since then.
Yeah, they were getting rich. Get rich quick scheme.
Garrett, did you learn that when you were preparing to work at Chick-fil-A? Did they tell you that so you had that knowledge?
No, it just happened when I was born at Northside Hospital. I was just ingrained with this sort of information.
Are you born at Northside?
Northside Hospital.
Oh, man.
The Woodruff family, the Candler family.
In East Point.
To fold into the rainy weekend, if you do need something to do with the kids, you could take them to the World of Coke and celebrate.
That's a great one.
Coca-Cola's birthday.
Yeah, it's such a good idea. I haven't been down to the World of Coke in years. But there is that a lot of College Football Hall of Fame also could be done. I've been through the College Football Hall of Fame a number of times. It is a cool experience. I don't know that my kids are on that level yet to really appreciate what exactly we're looking at. They just want to try the field goal attempts. You know, like my son's just like, let me boot this thing. But nonetheless, always a good time at any of those locations down there, man. So, yeah, I mean, I'm actually kind of mad at myself. I'm actually more mad at Bo that he didn't know who John Pemberton was. That seems like something, somebody that considers themselves a piece of the fabric of this city should know.
That's true.
Since I'm always catching strays from one Squidbilly. But nonetheless, man, you just, move on. It is what it is.
It's fine. I know a lot. I can't know everything. You know? I mean, I don't know what you want from me. I also just saw
her pen's moving right now, so that's coming on the recap.
My algorithm on Twitter screwed up. I'm disturbed, but I don't want to change the subject, so we'll talk about it later.
All right, so I'm sure we'll get to that Life and Squid, man. So much fun stuff coming up at the top of the hour. We're going to be talking Falcons a lot today. I want to get into the conversation at 7 o'clock about Bijan Robinson and how you could possibly, if you find the right way to do it, make a fortune. If Bijan Robinson has a good enough year, because his MVP odds are way down the chart, but I think they should probably be a little bit better. And also, Michael Penix visited with Brian McFadden this week. We got some cuts from that. But I do want to get into some of this conversation. Josh Kendall, Bo, put out an article about James Pierce and how the Falcons became comfortable with the trade-up. And to me, it is interesting because there's been a little bit of – and you'll have to tell me because you tend to say that you have the pulse of what the fan base is doing and everything else. I haven't seen some of the stuff that you've seen. I've seen more from national guys that ask questions about the trade-up for James Pierce and about them switching picks and everything else. But Josh Kendall had a great article yesterday where he essentially is like, the Falcons felt conviction about James Pierce at 26, and they felt fine with pushing that into this year's draft based on everything else that was going on.
Yeah, that's what I've seen is I think a lot of people are happy. But I think that there's a contingent of the fan base that was happy until they heard people talk about it, and then they became unhappy because there's a lot of people that listen to those guys like it's gospel, and they listen to some guys that are in the city, media guys in the city that have a microphone or a pen or both, and they listen, and when they hear negativity, that they are swayed. And I think that swayed some people where this thought process is they've given up too much. And I don't know how you know what they've given up, if it's too much or not. I mean, you go look at trades are always judged by what you do with the picks when you make a trade, right?
Yeah.
That's the way they're judged. Whether you give it up or not, you look at the players that were drafted at those spots, and then you say, well, we won that trade. And whether that's a fair assessment or not, the Trae Young Luka trade was predominantly kind of looked at by who the Hawks got for trading Luka to get Trae, right? I think it was Cam Reddish or whatever.
Yeah,
and it looks like it wasn't a win for the Hawks because of that. Now you can say that the trade was even, but the Hawks didn't win because they didn't really get any. The Cam Reddish wasn't anything here and or anywhere, to be honest. But I tend to think that for as much as they moved up, it was pretty fair. And if you look at the trade value chart, it was pretty fair. It was like that audio that remember that audio we had Howie Roseman the other day.
Yeah,
where he says, well, now I know why no one's taking our picks. Well, everyone that watched, all the reaction I saw was, oh, see, they're laughing at us because we traded too much.
Yeah, and just people, if you didn't hear that, what it is Howie Roseman, the general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles. He is made aware of the Falcons trade-up in the middle of his draft, and the video leaked, and he's looking around at other people sitting around him and the fact that the Falcons gave up a first-rounder, and he's like, oh, well, no wonder that I can't get anybody to trade with me. People are giving up first-rounders for next year.
Yeah, and thinking that he's laughing at the Falcons is a very interesting mindset. What he's laughing at is that he just got outbid, basically, and no one gets it more than a guy like Howie Roseman, the fact that when you're going up, 20 spots from 46 to 26, it takes a hell of a lot more than it does from 32 to 26, right? I mean, that's kind of – or 27 or wherever he was trying to go – and that's part of it. You got to pay more when you go up higher, and when someone's willing to come all the way from the second round. I thought was interesting about their process is they had this category called win because of players, and they don't have very many in that, and they snagged two guys that in that category of we will win because of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what these guys felt. And I've heard people talk about, well, you could get a D end, an edge rusher next year. Why did you have to trade up? You get another guy in the first round. And the win because of thing is like, I think Michael Penix fell into that. Now that as we get a year removed from that draft, we look at that draft and go, there was no Michael Penix in this year's draft. Maybe Cam Ward. That's it from that quarterback-wise. There's a really good chance we get next year. And look, the Falcons guys have looked at what's going to be next year. We might get to next year's draft and say, wow, there are no special edge players after the 11th or 12th pick. And James Pierce, after 1 year, we think now he is that. We know he's that guy, and that's what they thought, right? I mean, there's always that that win because of thing. Those, for what you need, they're not always there.
Yeah. I think that's a fair point. And, you know, I love the fact that you tied into the quarterback draft for last year. Why do you need Michael Penix right now? Well, we're looking towards the future here. And I think that they've obviously shown the ability to do that. And here's what I'll say for Terry Fontenot. And you follow me, and you guys can tell me if I'm right or wrong. The Falcons, dating back way before Terry Fontenot, let's call it the last 15 years, have been like top 20 in sacks like three times. Top 20. I'm not talking about top 10. I'm talking about top two-thirds of the league in sacks three times in the last 15 years. So if I'm Terry Fontenot and I see somebody knocking me for being convicted about James Pierce and also drafting two edges in the first round, like what am I supposed to do? What do you want me to do? I tried to trade for a guy last year that was a good edge rusher in Matthew Judon. I got nothing, right? And at some point, you got to look at, and I bring this up all the time, but you know I do, you have to look at the people that are part of the development in this organization and stop looking at Terry Fontenot about everything. All he can do is bring you the toys on Christmas morning. He can't judge how you play with them. You know what I mean? He's trying to get as much talent in the building as he can. If Terry Fontenot is convicted, and Josh Kendall does a great job on this article in The Athletic of talking about the background and the conversations with the families and the opportunities they had to meet with one another, they felt convicted about James Pierce. And I'm not going to knock them for that, because you know what? They felt convicted about Michael Penix. They felt convicted about Bijan. And we've talked about it all the time. Have they drafted good players? Yes. In the first round, they drafted good players. A couple of good ones in the second round as well. But at some point, the coaches that are a part of this and the support staff have got to develop these guys. And I think the reason you ask questions, it's like, well, you could have got him. You could have got a guy next year. Why not get the guy in the building now? Get rid of the rookie woes and the Band-Aids and everything else, and go ahead and start developing this guy so that everybody that's a part of this roster can begin to peak at the same time, so that you have that core moving forward that you need defensively.
Yeah, I read too much. I think you're right about it, honestly. I think you're right, because if that's your guy, then why not? And you got the two best players on your board. You never thought Jalen Walker was going to be there, and he was one of those, well, we're going to win because that guy's on our roster players. But I read too much, I hear too much, and I hear how all the there's been a lot of criticism about Terry Fontenot's second-round draft picks. Troy Anderson, that people didn't like that. And he is, like, and that's fair, because he hasn't been on the field.
Again, though, can you really knock Terry Fontenot for that? Like, how much can we knock Terry Fontenot for Troy Anderson having surgery last year?
Well, that's how – but here's the reality. That's how it goes.
I know. I agree. I know, but it's just –
I agree with the development, though. You're right there. But that's how it goes. And the knock, Mike, is that they traded up for him.
Yeah.
When they could have stayed pat and maybe got Nick Benito or somebody like that. Whether it's fair or not, I don't think I don't know if Nick Benito is that player here, because he's playing around an amazing cast in Denver, right?
Yes.
I mean, the DC, everything they got out there.
Well, Bo, I mean, the whole reality with this James Pierce stuff is, and I jumped in Mike's ear to tell him this, it's a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. Like, you need to go get the guys in-house right now. It's just simple economics. That's what it is.
Yeah. It's a high-yield savings account. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing. People don't see that because we fans are here, the analysis of that's a lot, and then that's what they think, and it's because, look, we're all there. Sometimes we trust guys in this business that are in the national spotlight more than the guys that are local, only because, well, they're national. So, they're in a bigger stage. But the reality for me is the same people that are mad that they traded up and said that they could have gotten that guy at 46 are the same people that criticized Terry Fontenot for his second-round draft picks. So, I mean, the guy doesn't miss in the first round.
Yeah.
Even Kyle Pitts had essentially a rookie of the year season, and then the injury, and then the rest has been written. But the guy is pretty good in the first round.
Yeah. They've had a pretty good – when they haven't needed development, they've hit a couple of home runs, man. You can't lie about that. Speaking of that, we'll talk a little bit about one of those first-round picks. That's Bijan Robinson. We'll kind of update you on what we think about him going towards next season and the numbers that he could have or would have. Also, we got to get into some of this Michael Penix conversation. Michael Penix was asked, guys, by Bryant McFadden a couple of days ago, if you were put in the starting lineup earlier in the season for the Atlanta Falcons, would you guys have gone to the playoffs? You do not want to miss the response from Michael Penix. We'll get into that on the other side of the break. Stick with us. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.